On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio. Now it's news and current affairs with SBS Dinka.
We're ping na yuara tonga jeng ne SBS Dinka Radio. Now kai walk ping with you can walk with you can loan SBS Dinka Radio in Australia. Eh na jang ding chen ko.
Ria chu Bangalore SBS Radio show from Gang eh na kwadu.
Eh and Daniel Atombo.
SBS Dinka Radio atoke biantung toke to drogumani na SBS Radio in KTL Pan Australia. SBS Dinka Radio ayaping ne an kote Pan Australia kujalapino. Hello and welcome. I'm Jack Dinkyanko of SBS Dinka Radio and today I will be joined by Dr. Lema Kolajawin. Dr. Lema Kolajawin is the chairperson for the Democratic for Change Party, formerly known as SPLM-DC. Dr. Lem served during the SPLM in 80s until 90s and then again he formed DC many years back. Now you will be talking in Juba. Dr. Lem, you welcome to SBS Dinka Radio. How are you?
Fine, thank you very much and my greetings to all the listeners of this important radio station.
Dr. Lem, most of the generation that served the people of South Sudan are different capacity, whether you are talking of 1950s or you're talking of 1960s, most of them are finishing. And they have gone with the history. You better now. You have written your book. You have given a lot of interviews. Some of them have not. If you talk of people like him, if you talk of people like Chagai, if you talk of people who have played a role, how are we going to get a history out of these people? And what are we supposed to do as people of South Sudan or anybody in order to extract such information?
I think you are absolutely right. You know, this is a problem with us, the South Sudanese, that we are reluctant to put pen on paper. And some of these considerations are always, you know, emotional, that, you know, I wouldn't want to touch on some people and so on. But public figures, always, you cannot avoid passing opinions about them the same way they pass opinion about others. You cannot avoid to pass opinion on common figures. This is not starting now. It's been long time ago. I have you have the cases of Ali Gwatala and most of the leaders of Anyanya, except Lago himself, who wrote something. But many of them didn't write anything. So most of our history is either being written by some foreigners who will not be well-versed in the details and the nitty-gritty of our society, or it goes unrecorded, and then we deny the future generation experiences that could have helped them, you know, chart their way forward. So that, yes, it's true, it is a common phenomenon that people don't write. Even when you look at the next generation of politicians, the crop that was that came up around the 60s, you know, and were very instrumental in the 70s and the early 80s. Also, very few of them wrote anything. The exceptions are Abel Elier, Bono Malwal, and two or three others. But so this is something that we need really to change. And I think the new generation has a role to play here.
Now, but
that you should continue prodding us to write our experiences. However they look, you know, trivial, they are not. They record certain actions that either had help or contributed in a different and a negative way to the history of our country.
Now, you are an academic and you have gone through some of the universities that are of a high standard, and what you read there was a history of that particular country, whether it is to do with Sudan or whether to do with the European countries. If South Sudanese believe in nationalism and they believe that there must be values that are created for that nation, history must be involved.
who played what and who did what.
That's right.
must be part of it. But the political class don't do that. There are no lectures about what happened and what will be learned from that. What do we need to do?
Yeah, truly, but this is what I'm telling you, that we are an oral society. This is true. Although we carry big degrees, but at the end of the day, we hardly put pen on paper.
Hmm.
So what I'm saying that what needs to be done is the young generation like you, who stand to benefit from such experiences, should be the one to continue prodding these generations to do something. You know, in the past they used to say, because our history has always come through oral tradition.
Mm.
People used to say that the death of an elderly person is the death of a library, or the loss of a library. Mm. This is true. So we should not be going with all our experiences. Otherwise, the nation will not have a spirit. We need to leave behind some of the things that we have done, whether good or bad.
But
the next generation.
With the generation that have gone to schools, does that have to come with the jealousy, though, that people don't always want to interact with the with those who are story makers, who have been to the situation? Always people don't want to have forums where they learn, and publication become the part and parcel of everyday life, where you create your own story and believe in it, and you don't need to reference where you get that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that mm-hmm. is going to affect our society?
Of course, but the only way to stop that is to have other references that talk on the same topic.
Hmm.
You know, if somebody wrote something, and then somebody else wrote something, and the two contradict each other, then somebody will begin to investigate where is the truth.
The truth, you know? Okay.
Yeah, so that if people don't write, then there is no way of knowing who is claiming and who is not claiming.
Is concept of Kokoro being replicated by the current political elites, of which Dr. Lem is included? We have not heard of your proposal yet, but the Kir proposed 28, Riek Machar proposed 21. The federal system, that is not explained. How are you going to manage 28 when you could not manage the 10? How are you going to manage 21 when you could not manage the 10? Is that a replication of Kokoro?
Well, I think you have the right to ask that. For me, I think that the politics should be about serving the people, not gimmicks, either to gain power or to remain in power. I've been very clear about, you know, there is nothing wrong about people demanding more states or more administrative units. But anything that is done without studies and without giving due consideration to the facts on the ground is bound to fail. And this is what, in relation to 21 or 28 or 20 whatever, all these have never been studied, they have never been subjected to public opinion, they have never been scrutinized, and therefore they were political gimmicks to win opinion. And usually when politicians, you know, become bankrupt in their agenda, they always resort to things that can make people feel that there is some change.
So you are saying that they are playing into people based on the situation?
Yeah, they are dealing to the sentiments of the people, and then in order to achieve some short-term games,
okay.
Because you'll hear them talking about the popular, oh, this is the popular view, this is what. And nobody went to ask the people before. The people were reacting to an announcement. So how can it be a popular thing?
Let's go to the concept. So, there is the concept of town to people, that which the government, the High Executive Council did in, I will take example in Bor, what Belalia did, was that they took some water system, what they call Masura, into the villages, and then put a generator there that will pump water to that particular village. We mean it will stop people moving from the village to Bo Town. I think that was the concept to town to people. How does the giving administration that will require more payment, more protection to the governors and all that work for the benefit of the normal citizen?
You know that, you know, the mostly abused concept by these politicians is what you have said, taking towns to the people.
Yeah.
Taking towns to the people is a well-known developmental principle. And what it means simply is that, you know, you need to take services
to the people,
to the countryside, because when they, and to stop their movements to towns, they move to towns because they think that towns, they have services, you know. They have the water, they have the school, they have the hospitals and so on. But they end up, you know, being squatters, you know, because they don't have, they cannot afford to rent houses, they cannot do that. So this is what contributes to what you call
slums.
The slums, that's right, that is the word, the slums. So taking the town to the people means you take the services to the people where they are. It doesn't mean in any way that you increase the number of government officials. Well, actually, that is the contrary. When you increase the number, it means that most of the money will go on paying.
On paying. You have 28 governments, you have 28 parliaments.
Yeah. So the least thing that will be achieved by this big volume of administration is taking services to the people. So this is always used by politicians.
Yeah,
it is not their intention. Even this, if you take now this concept of 28 states, if you read the order does not even tell you what is it supposed to do. There is no delegation of authority to the new body. It is just talks about that instead of 10, we have 28. That is it. And it goes on defining these 28 states.
Now let's go back. You have two things here. You have been a politician. You have been an academic, and also a student in Northern Sudan. Which means you understand the geography of Sudan. The geography of Sudan was controversial because most of the, if you come to Upper Nile area and then the western part, you're looking at the navigators were using the River Nile as the way to map the country. And as such, the geographical lines disagree with the ancestral mapping of the made by the locals or by the indigenous. Where did South Sudan government or Dr. Riek Machar came with the ideology that they are able to crap out certain state? What map are they referencing?
Well, at least to be fair, the group of Riek Machar gave a criterion, you know. They said these are the 21 are the former districts.
Of the British, okay.
Whether the former British district, but What remains now for you to, if you accept the idea, then the question will be whether the former districts were really 21 or another number. Okay?
They were 23, I think, is it?
Yeah, but this is the point. but they gave a criterion. They say this is their criterion. But when you look at the 28 states, there is no criterion. They never told us what was the basis of having 28 states, not 27, not 23, not 24, you know. What was the basis? Nothing. So administratively, we have had the districts, the provinces, and all this that the British invented for us. Now it remains, if we want to continue with that, because you must start with something.
Hmm.
If we want to continue with that, or we want to change it, then it must be done in a systematic way. And this is why I talk of his studies. And you know the government did very well during the talks when those of Riek Machar came up with the 28 states. They said, There's nothing wrong with that, but we need to study that. We need to find out what the people want. We need also to find out the cost of such a project. And as a result, the agreement included a provision that says this issue should be discussed during the interim period as part of the constitution-making process. But then people were surprised. Now, having scored at such a point during the talks, now they come and turn around again to say something different. Again, as I said, it is only for political gain, nothing more, nothing else.
No, for I just want to ask this question because you are a South Sudanese and you know much about the country. But in 1985, Dr. John Garang criticized Nimeiri for decree. Everything that that was said was decreed, and he was not happy with how Nimeiri was running the country, regardless of him being a rebel leader then. Should decree be used in an independent state? And when is the president supposed to use a decree?
Well, as we are a country that is governed by a written constitution, and the constitution provides very clearly the powers of all the individuals and institutions that are serving the country. So nobody is above the constitution. So the president, and this is a mistake Nimeiri used to do, you know, Nimeiri thought that he was above the constitution. when his powers themselves are provided for in the constitution. So nobody is above the constitution. But what you can say is that people should abide by their constitutional obligations. And this is what makes the country a country. The rule of law can never be enforced if people are not respecting the constitution. The comical part about this 28th state is that the order came out first, and later on,
the amendment.
The parliament has to make it constitutional. Yeah. So this only happens here in South Sudan. And it was a realization, of course, it was a realization that it was unconstitutional. Otherwise, why did they take it to parliament?
But you challenged that before the court. How did they respond to you?
Well, there's a lot to be said about the court because, as you know, we have a case that's still pending before the court now.
Yep.
On this matter since the 15th of October. Can you believe? Since the 15th of October.
That was 12 days after the decree was made.
Yeah, and then the court did not pass a ruling. Of course, we are not supposed to comment on what the court, but let me tell you something that we have already asked the Chief Justice to excuse himself from looking into our case because he made a statement.
Is that Chief Justice? Chandra?
Yeah, the Chief Justice. Yeah, he made a statement supporting the order. And that is fully behind the president on this order. So we have asked that he should not be the one seeing our case because he's not impartial.
And what did he say?
We are waiting. We will get a ruling on the 18th of this month.
But there was a writing that he was doing that as a chairman of a Gwo community. Is that like that?
No, Chief Justice is not allowed by law to be part of any organization other than the court, by law. And the law, and actually even after retirement, he's not supposed to, unless he doesn't want, because all these chief justices, even now,
the GN Council.
The one now who is heading the GN Council is getting paid for chief justice because the law says so.
So he's retiring. He's given a Chief Justice retirement benefits.
Yeah, and so he's not supposed to be active in politics.
Okay, now these are some of the thing that young generation may need to know, Dr. Lem. Where is the South Sudanese nationalism? If this kind of is that something you can? What is nationalistic now about that a South Sudanese should pick up a plaque and then start dancing? Where is that nationalism and what is supposed to be done in order to call yourself, you are a South Sudanese national?
Well, nationalism is what we see in Luanding, as I told you. You know, Luanding has shown that for him, South Sudan is above everything.
Yeah.
His politics has been devoted to pursuing goals that, at the end, united the people.
Okay.
And, yeah. So, nationalism is a I don't think we can cover it in this
Come back to this simple question here. There is a confusion here also in regard to your case. There is a legal system in South Sudan whereby there is judiciary, there is the executive, and there is the legislature. And who is governing who? Because it seems that they are interrelating, and one is like the executive. The executive seems to be having power over the two.
Yeah, but this should not be the case, because you know that the legislature is mainly to legislate. All the legislative function, making laws, everything. Even if sometimes the president initiates some laws, it must pass through parliament. So that one is understood. But the other thing that is the law. The judiciary, especially in a decentralized system or a federal system, the biggest power to control all these organs, even it can declare any decision from the president or from the court to be unconstitutional if it does not conform to the constitution. But I don't know whether they're exercising this power.
Why do you think that is happening?
Well, as I told you, that we have a case before the court, so I don't want to comment on the performance of the judges.
Okay, but it was part of the policy of the SPLM then in 2005 that South Sudan is having a problem, a legal problem, and the legal problem was divided into two. There was the customary laws, which are the laws that were practiced during the native administration, which is almost 80-something years. And then now the movement to a statutory laws that need to be brought together, because the judiciary was functional only in towns, but the villages were functioning in their own ways. How is that helping now in South Sudan? And then now the power, the jungle law that was practiced during the SPLA. How are the three working in Juba?
Well, you know, there has been a lot of slogans made by the SPLM in the past.
Okay.
Very good good ideas about justice, about equality, about freedom, which really made people to join in big numbers the movement, because it was seen as a movement that was fighting for human rights, it was fighting for justice, and so on. But of course, when power came, things became different. And I don't think most of what is happening now is what the SPLM called for.
Now, the last question is about if the transitional government is formed, are you projecting or will you be predicting that the two commander-in-chiefs of their own forces, president and his former vice president, will work for the benefit of South Sudanese, or do you disagree with that?
Well, you know our opinion from the beginning, that we said the transitional government should not have been given back to the politician. It should have been given back to the technocrats, because they are the people who have no vested interest in preserving the status quo or not getting to justice. But of course, that was overruled, and it was given to those who had the guns as a reward or as buying them into peace. This is what we were said. I have my doubts, but of course, I cannot prejudge. Let us see. And I hope, actually, let us hope that they will work for the interests of the people of South Sudan. But don't forget, they have a track record of 10 years for one of them and 8 years for another. That did not show that the delivering services to the people was their priority.
Will you agree when they come later and the percentage given to the other parties that you are going to be part of the government? Do you think they will listen to your advice, or will they totally disagree to put you back to that government?
Well, you know, the National Alliance is going to be part of the government, not because of that the other two want it, but it is because of the peace agreement. So the National Alliance will be in the government on its own. And although it is one out of 30, but we think that the voice of that one cannot be ignored.
But this factional grouping within the party later, there will be new alliances, whether from the SPLM in opposition or from the SPLM in government, even when you are going to be in that government too, because it will depend on new friendship and new ideas. Do you think now there is something beneficial to the ordinary citizen who are now affected by the economy anyway?
Well, I think that any situation that brings in more than two or three groups into play in politics is useful to the people.
Okay.
Because it generates competition, and when there is competition, people try to serve as much as they can in order to win.
Okay.
Those people.
And, thank you, Dr. Lem Akola-Jawin. To our listeners, we were talking to Dr. Lem, and we add in some political questions because of the time, and sometimes we don't get him sometime. So I hope you guys heard more about him, and there's a lot about Lualding Wool and Bab Africa, as he's known. And Dr. Lem, thank you always for your time with us. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Shukran.
Hi,
Shukran. Yep. Into SBS Dinka Radio.